The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Another interview from the Northern Spanish white wine region of Rueda. It is World Verdejo Day coming up Friday, June 5th. It might be Friday, June 5th when you are hearing this interview. Really excited for my next guest. Crazy family history, crazy stories. President of, and I always screw up the name, the Marquesas de Palace. It is Cristina Forner. Cristina, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
A pleasure. I'm here in Rioja and right to talk about the family history and all the expansion we did.
So let's actually really quickly, because you'll do it far better than I, how do you properly pronounce your winery beyond my butchering of the Spanish language?
Marqués de Cáceres.
Way better than mine. I'm holding actually a bottle of your 2023 Verdejo. We will get into all things Verdejo and Rueda in a little bit, but we just got to start here. Your family history is certainly historic, is certainly exciting and scary, going back to 1936. I'm wondering if you could tell everyone just about the dramatic stories of your grandfather and your father.
Yes, well, you know, the history sometimes is a matter of resilience, as it has been with my family. My grandfather was a negotiant in Spain, and he had some vineyards in La Mancha. And he used to export his wines to some markets in Europe. And when he was coming back to Spain, he thought that Spain should open more over to other countries. And he started to be involved in politics. He has been a Republican deputy in Valencia, and this has been the worst decision he did, because the family had to get into exile in France, where my grandfather had a warehouse with some wines there. So he sold this facility and started to invest in a vineyard in Minervois. So it's how they restart from scratch in France. Unfortunately, my grandparents died, I would say, too young. And my father was 18 years old. He had to stop the studies and was responsible of the family. So with his brothers, they decided to sell the property, and they started as a wine negotiant, my uncle in the Rhone Valley and my father in the Loire Valley, where I was born. So I got some good memories from the Loire Valley. And then this was in the 50s. So they sold this both facilities as negotiants, and decided to invest in Bordeaux at a time when Bordeaux was in the middle of an economic slump. I'm talking about 1963. So they had the opportunity to invest because they wanted to come back to the vineyard, to the terroir. So they first acquired the Chateau Larose-Châteaudun, and 1 year after, they invested in Chateau Camassac, classified growth. So they were totally abandoned, and they went, these two properties, to their former, shall I say, to their former glory, with the help of Mr. Emile Penaud, who was the guru of the enology on that time. So my uncle and my brother, who was working as well in Bordeaux, they were totally French, and my father was looking to Spain and tried to get some revenge on the past. So with a professor, Emile Penaud, he decided to visit some of the best places in Spain. And he just realized that Rioja, which was, let's say, 4 hours away from Bordeaux, had such a great tradition. But on that time, most of the traditional Rioja wines used to be aged for too long in oak, so the reds were over-oaked. The whites and rosé were almost oxidized. So my father started with his, I would say, Bordelaise school of vinification, and they started to make these wines, red wines with more fruit, well balanced with nice touch of oak, that as we use mainly French oak barrels, which are thinner and get better, more elegant touches of toasty notes. And they made whites and rosé, which were full of fruit and quite vivid. So this has been a revolution at that point that, well, it has been, I would say, a new school in Rio.
Speaking of revolution, so your family back in 1936, there's civil war, and you guys had to exile from Spain to France. That's not usually a story. Certainly, it's not a story you hear about in the New World when it comes to the history of a winery, is it?
Yes, totally. But I think that it's a good example on how old and new world can combine. I mean, tradition, and when I'm talking about new world, it's new thinkings, new school, and I think it's the way to improve the style of the wine and to get closer to the new trends without losing your identity, which is quite important.
And that must always be, even for you now as president, a challenge every now and then, where you want to respect the traditions of the past, because so many of them are why a region like Rioja is so famous and makes world-class wine, but being able to modernize, being able to innovate, that we see this struggle, you know, in Piemonte, when they used to have all their Barolo wars about how to age their Nebbiolo. I imagine the same thing, certainly when your father came back and was changing some of the winemaking traditions.
He changed some of this wine tradition, that it has been a very difficult time, because if you consider that here, the youngest red wine we have is a Crianza. So from 1970, when my father founded Marchese Cáceres from scratch, he bought the soil and started to build up a small winery. So he started from scratch. He had to make the red wines, age them properly, you know, and then in bottle. So we just arrived to 1975. So for 4 years, you had to invest, make the wines, and be so patient. So this has been a very difficult time, because when my father started to launch, especially the red wines, people were, the Spanish palate was not prepared to this new style of wine. So this has been probably also part of the success of the international side of Marchese Cáceres, as we had to look for those market who would accept this new style of wine. So my father started with some of the, I would say 30, 35 markets, European markets, until he asked me to join the company as I studied business school in Bordeaux. I was working in my own business, real estate business in Paris, in end of 1983. He was targeting that the future of Marchese Cáceres would be the excellent, but also to get the brand in an international recognition. So he asked me to move from Paris to Logroño at the end of 1983, which has been a great challenge for me, I have to confess. But I thought that the history of my family well merited my efforts, my sacrifice, and I was happy, even though it has been very, very difficult at a time when this rural context was mainly dominated by men. I was probably the only woman who was in this wine business. So, but humility and also the support my father brought me. And after some months, he asked me to take my suitcase and travel around the world and open new markets. And I have to say, the suitcase, when they had no wheels, you had no mobile phone. I was young and with such dynamism and conviction that this has been the way to get the positioning Marquesa Cáceres has today, where we are exporting 50% of our total production to over 135 countries. So it has been, I would say, a very exciting experience, even though very difficult, because I've been traveling 6 months a year, almost 15 years I was alone in the export markets. But it has been such a satisfaction for me. I would say, I could return to my younger age, I would make the same choice.
That's great to hear. And obviously part of that is your love for your family and your father and your respect for the history of your family and the struggle they went through. You want to keep that alive. I'm curious, before we move to 2007, when you took over, was there a certain country, a market? What was the toughest time for you when you were younger in the 80s, early 90s, traveling with no wheels on your luggage, selling your wine, and also doing it, you know, as a woman in a market, in so many markets that were very conservative? As you said, it was mostly male dominated. And here you come in trying to sell a more modern version of Rioja to different markets around the world. Is there some of those moments that stick out for you, the most difficult ones?
I think that when I started, one of the targets was United States. As you probably know, it's a difficult market. Nobody's waiting for you. You need a lot of money. We didn't have in that time. It has been, I would say, a harsh work visiting restaurants, supermarkets, having meetings with buyers and try to get them to and convince that Marquesa Cáceres would fulfill part of the assortment, wine assortment, but also Asia, which has been the second, I would say, part of the of my experience, which is quite tough, especially now. Both, in fact, United States, for these taxes, imported taxes, we have to support Asia because of the economy, China and all these places which are suffering of the war situation. We are suffering all about that. But in 2007, I was mainly involved with the export markets, and my father decided to retire. So I had to take over the presidency of the company. And in 2008, as we all know, we had to face this terrible financial crisis when some of the competitors were offering, well, buy me 10 cases and I will give you 3 or 4 for free. And I was looking at the balance sheet and I said, well, with all the wines we have here aging properly, no can in bottle, this is terrible. So we just decided to go towards excellence, even more towards excellence. And we decided to expand our quality experience to other prestigious deals like Rueda. In 2014, we acquired 125 hectares in Rueda, in this nice village between Cerrada and La Seca. And in 2019, we acquired a boutique winery in Ribera del Duero. These have been our two major, I would say, projects at a time when we just decided that we had to expand our strategy, but also to invest when I would say the future wasn't that clear. So again, I would say that it's a part of our credo. We believe that the future of the wine is quality, and we are always striving to get even more quality by selecting the best plots of land, making artisanal process in our vinification, and getting even higher to these premium wines.
What was it? So you expand around 2014. What was it about the land in Rueda, and what was it about the grape Verdejo that attracted your company to expanding?
Well, I think that we all know that nowadays the demand of white wine is increasing. But talking about 2014, it wasn't that clear. So I'm happy that we made the right decision. But we made the right decision not only because of the demand, it was because of our conviction that Breda had to explore again, like in Rioja, new commitments, especially talking about quality. I have to say that Breda should be on our radar. It's a 40% share of all the white wine sales in Spain and merits the same recognition internationally. So in Breda, the main grape is Verdejo, which is the 100 Verdejo wine you were showing in this bottle, which is I would say it's a wine which is worth trying. It's fresh, it's distinctive, unique for its quality and very good, I would say, approach talking about price. So our vineyard is located at 700 to 800 meters above the sea level. We have a continental climate with big differences of temperature between nights and days, which is almost 20 degrees. It's where I would say we get the best condition to make great wines with our Verdejo. Consider that the winters are very cold, springs are short with weeks of frost, hot and dry summers, and the vine plants have these deep roots to get their hydration, nice stony soils. So we get these crispy, citric, floral notes, which are part of the charm, the attractive character that our Breda is showing, our Verdejo.
And then on the end, you get the fennel, you get the herb notes on the end, depending on how old the vines are and where you guys are. You have those craggy, old 100-year-old vines all over the place, which is something to see up close.
And you see these nice stony soils, which are regulating also these big differences of temperature. I think that this Verdejo is the sort of wine which is matching with everything. It's, I would say, the informal or formal wine you can have at any moment. I strictly believe that wine is made to be enjoyed at any moment. So it's easy to uncork a Verdejo because it's an easy drinking, but it has this structure, it has this citric and also this hints of grapefruit final on the mouth, which brings vivid and awake up your tasting buds. So it has such a versatility to be drank as an aperitif with the seafood, meat. Well, it's a great wine. And also because we make the right selection of small plots of land when they get to maturation. Fortunately, we are very well equipped and we make the vinification with a gentle pressure to bring out these floral notes we can get on the nose. And also we use stainless steel tanks to make the vinification. And also cement tanks, where we get this rounder character, and the blend is ideal. I would That's just fun. Say, well, it's time to taste the Verdejo, Marqués de Cáceres.
Well, I was going to ask you, but you kind of, well, you did answer it. What can people expect? Because the 2023, the Verdejo is available at the LCBO right now. Crazy value in terms of price. It's going to be well under most of the whites you're going to find from Loire, from Bordeaux. You kind of answered what should people expect if they open this bottle.
I would say that if they are prepared to discover an idol gem, Marqués de Cáceres Verdejo is the answer. It has everything you can look for in a very nice and well-structured white wine with this crispy, lively, fruity character and these floral notes. And I think that it's the sort of wine you always enjoy, whether you are young or older or whatever. It's the ideal bridge to get different generation, because now we are talking about young people, that they are supposed to drink less wine that we can expect them to do. But at Marqués de Cáceres, we always are betting on every generation. For example, now in July, we have a wine festival with a disc jockey, 650 people enjoying wines. And it's where you see that you are probably 50% of very young people and 50% people like you and me, which are dancing and enjoying life. And at the end, we make wines to be enjoyed.
Also, for people out there that are looking to break free from just always drinking mass-produced Italian Pinot Grigio, the Verdejo Rueda is a big upgrade to just what a lot of people do. They just say, "Oh, I'll get a glass of Pinot Grigio," because they're too busy to know better or to explore. So let us help you. If you see on the menu a glass of Rueda, I'd say give it a shot. I think you'd find it more pleasing than a lot of the Pinot Grigio you get in restaurants here in Canada.
But as I was mentioning before, Rueda is 40% share of all the white wine sales in Spain. It's for sure, it will be probably this new attraction all over the world once people will get into discovering Rueda and the Verdejo grape, because it has its own identity. Nowadays, we are looking for new experiences, new taste, new approach to discover wines. And I think that Rueda and Verdejo is a great discovery.
Actually, I was going to ask you, you mentioned identity. How far along has Rueda come in terms of getting into the minds of wine drinkers who love Spanish wine? Because for so long, when you think about Spain, you think about Tempranillo, you think about red wine, you think of Rioja. It's been around for a long time. It's been incredibly successful. I understand why that's the first thing you think of. But how far has Rueda come, say, from 2007, 2008, when you took a much more major role with the company, versus today in June of 2026?
I think that first, Rueda started to exist as from the 11th century. But for many years, you had these wineries who used to make big volumes. Didn't were looking for exhibiting the full expression of the Verdejo. At a time when many investors or winemakers, better than investors, because it's not a matter of investing, it's a matter of conviction, it's a matter of understanding the soil, the identity you can bring out. So we have been many wineries who have investing in Rioja and Rueda because they just had the conviction that they could make different style of Verdejo. And it's when, I would say, as from 2014, when we started, first we have been involved in the Consejo Regulador, the official body which control the Rueda, to be even more strict on the regulation, in order to be able to leave all these newcomers to extract the full identity of the Verdejo grape, for example. And we have been a great part of this. So I think that this revolution, which has less than 10 years or more or less, it's giving some extremely good results nowadays, because we see that there is a big demand all over the world. But it's not only the demand, it's that the acceptation of the quality is getting even more, I would say, certified.
And again, it's a great area. It's old vines. It's mostly biodynamic. It's pre-phylloxera. You can get great examples. Even the Gran Vino, the higher designation of Rueda, you can still get it around the same price as Village level Burgundy. They're very different wines, Burgundy versus this, but you're getting, you know, high quality. I'm wondering, going back to you for a second, how different of a leader are you now versus when you took over? You've been president, it's going to be coming close to 20 years. I'm wondering, how have you grown as a leader?
You gain even more experience, obviously. You learn how to get the right responses to many difficulties you have to strive with. And also, as we know now, the difficulties of the wars and the economy, we are facing the many situations where you need the support of your professional, the team we are working with. And it's very important to get people who are convinced, who are passionate with wine. And we believe that even though people are drinking less, they will drink better wines. So it's where we know that the efforts to strive towards the excellence and make even more better wines every time we can, get the best equipment, communicate what we are doing, and also our differentiation. All that is part of, I would say, my strength nowadays, because I see future in the wine business. I often listen to people who say, well, the wine business is as difficult time. The wineries may not survive and blah, 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 blah. And I say, well, I like to see the glasses half full, not empty. So I think I am faithful about excellent quality wines. And there we were talking about Marqués de Cáceres Verdejo. It's this white wine which brings so much pleasure, because it's an excellent white wine. I would say that it's the sort of wine that you will get a full identity. And nowadays, with the global world, wine world, identity is also a strength and differentiation.
And if you're going to have your glass half full, not bad to try with this 2023 Verdejo. Christina, thank you so much for being part of the podcast. Again, everyone can find this wine at the LCBO, and also find the reds, find the Riojas as well. Explore the wines of Spain if you haven't had a chance to. Christina, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
It's a pleasure. And well, we have open doors to all these wine lovers who would like to discover Marqués de Cáceres in Rioja, in Rueda, and also in Ribera del Duero, where we have La Capilla, a boutique winery. So we have so much to talk about and to say. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.